Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art of Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and the AEW Match Guide. Follow us all over at Blue Sky. As far as I know, we've all made the jump in some degree or fashion, apart from Josh, apart from Youngboy. You'll hold on struggling until his last dying grasp. But everyone else has jumped over, and so Sam has made a starter pack for all of us as well. So you can head on over there and accumulate with everybody. And yeah, there's multiple, all the starter packs for like Hero to Follow. Block pack as well, just like an automatically updating block list of knobheads where not only do they not get ground running or whatever, you don't even see them. It's just like, my God, just completely shut it all out. But anyways, we are all over there, including Dickie and the ChoppedTees.com. Buy all of our merch over at ChoppedTees for every single show for the Social Suplex. Or if you want to support us all, just buy them main brand stuff. All high quality tees. I cannot recommend them enough. My main thing to say is I'm wearing my hoodie too much, but I've genuinely made an effort this week to not wear my hoodie because I'm wearing it too much. That's myself on the merch. Myself on the merch, the hoodies are so comfortable, I'm making a conscious effort to not wear it. Especially my one that's white. My white one, yeah, you don't wear a white shirt too much. That's by the Tunnel Talk one. You can wear that one all the time. Trish and Sarah, theirs is bright green. It works perfectly well. So it's a Suplex bright blue. Oh, also, Keeping It Strong Style one. Jesus Christ, designed for Tanahashi. But anyway, go over to chopped-tees.com to get all the latest merch. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes, and we're out of here. It's one of those weeks. I feel like I've made a lot of notes, but it's one of those ones where there's stuff in segments I quite like, but I don't have actually a lot to say about them. You know, move on. So anyway, let's jump on over to Buffalo, New York for Friday Night Smackers.
Sami Zayn said what the four of us once had was special. Well, let's run it back again. It seems like we have a loose alliance of original Bloodline members set to do battle at War Games.
Kicking off with, well, a lengthy recap. Then Roman Reigns came out to eat up a few minutes with his entrance. And then we got to the actual segment. Then out came Jey Uso. Not through the crowd. We didn't have time for that. Like, after Roman Reigns, after the recap and everything, like, we were already, like, 8 minutes deep and nothing had happened. God, we are 8 minutes into this show and we have finite time. we really only got, like, 80 minutes of stuff to actually fill the show with. And you've eaten up a tenth of that already and you've done nothing. Absolutely nothing. It jumps out just because of the... I feel like the new techniques that AEW used this week for their production order... and the way that they flowed through their show. The transitions between segments were like three in a row, which all bled and fed into each other. So you just got a massive, like, smooth transition between like three whole segments, starting off the show immediately with a wrestling match. It's a show that was almost like a breath of fresh air for a kind of way to flow a wrestling show. But it makes this SmackDown stand out a lot more. God, we're 8 minutes in and nothing's happened. Absolutely nothing. Jey Uso's plea to Roman, just listen to what he has to say. Immediately bringing out Sammy. I say immediately, we are like 8-9 minutes deep. The man received to applause of Sammy Uso chants. A lot of things have happened, but on some level, that feeling of family that was there with the Bloodline, not only does Sammy look back on that fondly, but he thinks Roman wants that too. You're not indifferent. I think you love me. Sammy reminding us just how entertaining it was when he was in the Bloodline with him making them all laugh. Love that note that for all of it to happen though, he needs Roman to apologise, but not to Sammy. To apologise to Jey. And he does it. Yay! He's sorry that Jey ever wasted his time with this. Boo! Immediately swinging into calling out Solo and Sammy walking out. Jacob Fatu getting some time talking on the Tron, just oozing that the WWE audience are going to absolutely love him by the time goes on, which is setting us up into our main event angle. The show was built with some backstage bits, like some solid backstage bits, allowing room to show Roman being his old self and getting told, "I said no to this if it's going to be you acting like you did before," in response from the Usos. Like Jay being the one who was always, who obviously, I say always, Jay being the one that stood up to Roman initially. But did he? Oh no, he got rewritten to be the one standing up to Roman. That was it. That was the confusion. Trying to remember, it's like, no, Jimmy did. Jimmy was the one who was against him all the time. And it's like, oh wait, no. When Jay turned, it was written as if it was Jay the one that was trying to say, yeah, it's complicated because it makes no sense. The reason Jimmy stepped away and came back, it doesn't through line make sense. But yeah, both of them are talking back to Roman. It's like, we said no if it's going to be like this. And that's what this SmackDown was. Roman coming to terms with the fact that they had said it can't be like this, but now they are showing it through their actions. It's not just words. They really do mean it. Sami was the first one to stand by his words, and that maybe gave the courage to the Usos to do the same thing. But it's people standing by their words. They're not going to be doing that same stuff, and Roman's going to have to change. He cannot operate like he used to. Almost like the phrase I've used with like Sami Zayn and Jey Uso getting pulled back in is almost like a reluctance to be pulled back in. But maybe with Roman, it is almost a reluctant babyface turn with that acknowledgement from the crowd and everything. He's still the same guy, he's still the same dickhead, but the state of play around him has completely changed, and this is him actually going through his character change rather than just, oh, he's a babyface now, therefore he has all the goody characteristics. It's like, no, this is way more interesting, way better character. But our main event was the Tribal Chief acknowledgement ceremony. Bloodline's single shot entrance was so solid. The more backstage and then walking through into the arena. Used as an ad break lead-in for the second time of the night. It's like, hey, I like it. Well, that is me watching the show not live. I don't know if it's a technique because it's designed to let you soak into the atmosphere. I don't know if that gets taken away from if you then have to sit through a run of ads. Like you follow them all the way out and then it's used as an advertisement hook rather than to get you invested before they speak. But like watching it afterwards with no adverts or just wind through them, like, it's fine. Like, for me, it works pretty well. Solo only got to say Roman's acknowledge me catchphrase before the man himself came on out. Sokoa needing that acknowledgement and recognition from Reigns. A nice subtle character motivation nod as Roman asked the crowd if they acknowledge him. Because for him, that was the entire point of the catchphrase. It was all about receiving their acknowledgement after their flat out rejection of him from 2015 to 2020. Now just receiving undying love almost unconditional love from the fans. Which really does help feed into that fake Tribal Chief feel to the Solo Sikoa character. Which is being leaned on more and more, and very wisely having Fatu do the odd little thing to help you get understand his character and give you little reasons to get behind him for the future. Because once Solo is properly taken down a peg, look, he's right there to step up. The battle lines being drawn, Solo still offering for Reigns to be on their side, directly mentioning War Games and who will be the five men for either side. Sami out as Solo called him their fifth man, only for Sami to not miss his kick this time, nailing the wannabe chief and giving us the reunion. Four of the five lads confirmed for both teams, with Sami Uso following suit and raising his one, looking right at Roman. A nice double pop with Sami getting a reaction for him raising his one. And then Roman too, lifting that finger and getting a secondary pop and arguably an even bigger reaction as we get the four properly lined up again. But I think part of the reason I like this as well is they hit on the fact that there wasn't all five people there. So it became, well, if the Bloodline gets Roman or if the Bloodline gets Sami, that's their team sorted and then the other team's kind of screwed. So I quite like that little swerve, even though you knew what the end point was going to be, because for me that sets up the future shows. Because even though you know it's not going to be Sami, you know they're going to be the four standing at the end of the show. But you don't know who the fifth man for the team is actually going to be. So yes, technically, the drama, you never really truly believe it. But I feel like for what it's setting up for the future shows, for me, that's good setup. They don't have to do a big advertisement thing being like, who's the fifth man? They might do because it's WWE, but they don't have to because they've done this. It's been set up. It's all there. Like, you will go into their segments already asking the question who's going to be the fifth man. They don't need to remind you. They don't need to really put all the advertisements and big things around it. Number five with fireworks, or whatever. They don't need to do that. And you kind of saw it in Monday Night Raw, where instead of making it this big flashy thing, it was backstage segments. It was talking. Just backstage talking to different people. We'll get to that when we get to Monday Night Raw. They were just trying to find that fifth man, going to all sorts of logical people that would make sense for each character to go to. It was like, oh yeah, you might be a decent person for me to approach to be our fifth man. Like, yeah, I really like that. Speaking of stuff I really liked, Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. A single shot following the lad out into the arena as the ad break lead in. It will be a shame when this stuff is treated like standard WWE production, because I still get the happy tummy feels seeing all this stuff. It's like, oh, a single shot following Randy Orton, through backstage, through Gorilla, out to the entrance ramp, panning around him as he looks around the crowd and as he makes his way to the ring. You followed him in and now you can watch his segment after the break. It's like, yeah, like, I don't mind it. Poor Randy out there with a sore throat and the green light to say the word shit. So, oh, it's getting serious now. Great call to have KO just walk out with no music or branding on the Tron playing or anything. Just being held back by Petey Williams and Jason Jordan, pushing past them and running into brawling with Randy in the ring. A swift kick to the dick before nailing a pile driver with the full serious broken neck sell from Orton as the officials and commentary all play into why the move was banned. It got the full stretcher and neck brace medical attention treatment too. Colin Graves questioning the replay being played rather than just going serious voice. It's like, oh, this is just really bad. They gave them something to get angry about. The segment just feel like there's more to it. Single camera following Orton out as he's loaded into the ambulance. Again, there wasn't camera stuff set up backstage. It's like, oh, I think I was talking about this last week. They said there being a camera already there. We use a camera that's out in the arena and we do the single shot following through to make it feel a lot less produced. And what I was talking about earlier with him walking out, like, you kind of stay invested in the moment if there's no cutting away from it. Kevin, whenever I say that, yes, I'm talking about an ambulance spot where you're meant to be, oh, feeling emotional. But I think of Braun Strowman flipping a truck, where they had all of that production all around Braun Strowman genuinely flipping a truck, but they kept cutting all over the place. When you do that in cinema, the reason you're doing that is you're masking the fact that it's not actually happening. But Braun Strowman actually flipped a truck, and it's actually incredibly impressive. Some bloke who was there filmed it on his iPhone, and the footage of that is infinite. More impressive than what they aired on television, because it's just a single shot and watching him do the thing. If it's cutting all over the place, you're constantly being jumped about and it feels like it's being produced. Same logic here, just following Randy through backstage, hardly any camera cuts. This was great. Like, I love the way the power driver in WWE can now be treated as such a serious move, and it does so much for Kevin Owens. Like, no, I don't need AEW to also follow suit. This is a uniquely WWE thing. AEW have their own uniquely AEW stuff. Both companies are allowed things that they are both doing well. We're in a new age. The age of just flinging shit at each other whilst in your own separate cages, you know, over on Twitter. It's like, that era is dead. Like, no, yeah, both sides. I've got things that I generally think they're both doing really well, and the power driver stuff for WWE, they've turned that into something great here. Also, big LOL at the commentary in their serious mode. Oh, I just can't concentrate on the show. As we transitioned into Pretty Deadly, doing the entrance with that ABBA music playing in the background as they pose in slow motion on the corners. It's just, I feel like a very purposeful juxtaposition. I feel like that was very, very purposeful. And there was also a big new reveal, a new women's title. Finally, the women's division getting a mid-card title, which will be shared between the two brands. The WWE Women's United States Championship, a white belt version of the men's title. It was just presented in a VTR play with Nick Aldis talking to camera as music played over him. Not the biggest way to reveal it, but a mid-card title for the women's division should mean so much in the long run. Also, for me, it makes sense to announce it and build it now, given there's currently a limited time for it to slot into anywhere right now. I look at the title and go, well, where's that going to appear? He's struggling for time already. However, when we reach the Netflix era, and every fucking show is 3 hours long, suddenly there's more than enough room for such a championship. That's the way I looked at it, was that you announce it now, you get people excited for it. Yeah, you are struggling for time now. Yeah, you've only got 4 hours of television and you're kind of struggling to get people on as it is. Introducing mid-card title, where's that going to go? Well, you're about to jump to six. There's about to be more than enough room for it. Like, I'm so for this. I feel like it's a really smart idea. Not the 3 hour show thing, I've already said that, but if you must do 6 hours of content across your two shows, not including NXT or Speed stuff, if you must, this is a good way to flesh out the women's division. A nice little mini elevation before pushing into a world title. I feel like it's been needed for a while. For the way WWE likes to book and they like to elevate, I feel like it's quite a needed title. So yeah, long run, I feel like this will be pretty good. Positive, I'm feeling positive about that title. I'm feeling good vibes with it. Which brings me to the other notes. I'll start off with the women's stuff. Tiffy got an earful from Nia after getting a match booked between them and the women's tag team champions, Jade and Bianca. Jade and Bianca will obviously talk about them because they main event on Monday Night Raw. The champions' tiger gear looked awesome on this show, which fed pretty nicely into this match being used to display just how great they are. Candice played the indie distraction role. Naomi evened the odds. Nia evened her. Cargill still kicked her. Stratton missed her moonsault and Bianca snatched the win. In what for me felt like a setup for what happens on Raw. as much as I was like, as much as I had little notes on this one, I feel like, no, save it for Monday Night Raw, because this was a set of what happened in the Raw main event. This is like a part one to what happens. Speaking of Pretty Deadly, they lost pretty soundly as a pissed off Ciampa just beat them both up with ease without tagging Johnny in. Cole made sure to mention how he was acting like the Blackheart version of the character, just, you know, make sure that everybody's following, because it was done through action. As we've seen with how people talk about WWE, there's quite a few people who don't notice those stories are happening. Something like this, I feel like normal viewers would have picked up that Ciampa is acting differently. They may not have picked up that it was specifically Blackheart. I don't feel like they needed to be told specifically that's what was happening here. However, quite often with something like this, it just means that you can immediately jump to the next thing and you don't have to slowly play out of it. Oh, you don't have that stage of, oh, is he like the Blackheart? And then the next week you play that same beat again, just maybe slightly more viciously, and it's like, oh no, he's definitely being the Blackheart. Here you've kind of squashed the two together, so you can skip a week in the progress of the story. Bayley faced a new solo, Candice LeRae. After Indy's release, it just feels strange. She'd been booked with LeRae on TV regularly for the past weeks prior. The story was how well Hartwell's presence worked for Candice, so now her story is that... Yeah, sorry, just never mention it and focus on Bayley. The goodie reading the baddie's injury, fake out, and snapped into a quick fall. Good for Bayley. And Motor City Machine Guns faced A-Town Down Under in a wee little showcase in the show's death slot. Yeah, I don't feel like this is going to do a lot to get people super behind Motor City Machine Guns, but it's always good just to give them a wee showcase. Like, they've had big displays those first few weeks. Now, it's perfectly fine to put them in the death slots for this episode. It doesn't help the fact that I was expecting, oh, they're in the main event because it's Bloodline adjacent, and as soon as they're not Bloodline adjacent, they'll be put into not great slots. And this immediately happened. Because other stuff have played out, I feel like this is a perfectly fine ebb when you're going to have a flow within the next 2 weeks at some point, especially as they seem to get a pretty decent build from Street Profits, who on the WWE social media, Street Profits cut an amazing promo, which is definitely worth seeking out. Montez Ford just kicking into a gear, which was just so great to see. You can always see that frustration from the way that they're being handled kind of seeping onto the screen now, but at the moment it's being used as a great creative force, or at least a driving force for the performances from the wrestlers themselves. But yes, Final Night SmackDown was absolutely fine. Not that crazy a show. Not really. It's just continuing to build. And again, for a few stuff, I was like, oh, it feeds into Raw. Quite a few stuff set up what would happen on Monday Night Raw. Then Monday Night Raw sets up SmackDown. So it's a continuous build all the way to the Survivor Series, which is setting up relatively nicely as a show. So let's jump on over. Let's talk about a Survivor Series, but this time from the Red Show's perspective, from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and the Ring General Good.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Gunter, he's the Ring General. Raw kicked off with the World Heavyweight Champion. Damian Priest won the number one contenders match last week in KSA, so we're set for this SummerSlam rematch at Survivor Series. Damian Priest saw the advertisements for Gunter's segment, so came on out to see if the champion would insult him to his face, hitting on all the repeat notes from back in August, before nicely transitioning into the present state of things. So we didn't just stay as a relatively standard WWE recap promo that doesn't really feature any character, because they did at least then immediately transition into the new fresh stuff. No Judgment Day wait around Priest and Gunter, having just lost against Cody Rhodes at Crown Jewel. It's not been long, but the playing field is very much different from their last match. Really just a wee segment setting the lads up for the next couple of weeks, and propping Kaiser ready for Priest to go through. I assumed when they had this segment it would be next week, but no, immediately on the show. So we'll jump straight into Priest versus Ludwig Kaiser, because this perfectly fine edition of Raw needed some more action. Sure, why not? Just a quick 5 minutes or so to batter Kaiser and give us our champion and champion post-match stare down. Like, hey, give time to the commentators to sell the story. Of just like, is this the first time we're seeing Gunter doubt? Doesn't feel like one of those stories got believable momentum behind the challenger, but it does feel like a nice little notch for the champion. Gunter wins and does that. It feels like that's going to really help him in the long run as he then runs into the Royal Rumble road and the believability of his defence as we go into that road to WrestleMania. I feel like this is quite an important notch of seeing him tested in a mental way like this, rather than just the relatively standard, I'm going to be the plucky babyface hero that's going to best you on this occasion. Like, it's less like that. Like, he's been something different to the table in his challenge of Gunther. And to be fair, Sami Zayn, when he actually beat Gunther, he also went for the mental side. So I feel like it is kind of important to show that Gunther does have a capability to withstand that, and that it's not like a super weakness of anything, like you have to exploit it correctly. Because my slight worry is, even though Damien Priest specifically brought up the fact that the only reason that he lost at SummerSlam was because of Finn Balor turning on him and costing the match, my worry is we get another Finn Balor interference, Judgment Day, schmozzy type of thing. So even though it's all set up for Gunther to win without the interference, I don't know if the way they like to book stuff can get out of their own way to tell this specific story. I'd like it to. I'd like it to, because it's been set up that way. It's kind of like a prove me wrong. You've set it up, so you might be doing this story this direction. But I know old habits die hard. And if you want to continue the rivalry, if you're like, you don't have to have the Judgment Day interference. And let's also talk about the Bloodline recruiting. Throughout the show, Sammy and the Usos made plays for their numero cinco for their War Games teams. It was a nice change to see the chaps making such logical attempts for lads that you would really believe someone would want on their team, rather than just, you're another babyface not currently sailing past on a separate story ship. I don't know. Like, we've had interactions in the past, and these are the reasons I believe you might want to join our team. They very much asked wrestlers that are knee-deep in their own problems, as seen by Seth Rollins' reaction. They were seen in the background segments throughout the show, getting turned down by various lads like Ray Ray saying no to Jay, whilst others got main focus jabber, like Sammy approaching Seth Rollins right after the man's rematch with Bronson Reed got booked. He's thinking about other shit right now, Sammy. Like, his mind is not on this. But also Sammy's family cell not really working at all for the Shield man, and later in the show Solo was also not able to convince the man. But I did like the fact that they didn't get any like big in-ring segment as well. All done backstage. And that's kind of what I was talking about, where it could have been very easy or maybe very tempting just to do big who's going to be the fifth man graphics promoted throughout the show, and then they come out in the ring and you do some form of thing where you don't really get an answer. But this, the crowd never feels cheated because they don't even go out into the arena. Just have them doing all this stuff backstage and going towards different people, because they can go out in the arena on SmackDown, which is like the majority of the people involved in the feud, that's their show. Which is also part of my point of, don't really have a lot to add. It's one of those things where I was like, oh yeah, this is quite nice. Yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it? It's nice to see it done differently. Anyway, let's jump on over to the main event, the Women's Tag Team Championship. Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair versus Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez. With such little time left when this started, so absolutely no time to faff. The champions giving signs of miscommunication between them, nudging that bit closer to the elevating purpose of this team and an eventual split. Cargill looked awesome as she spun Morgan from the torture rack position around and down into Jaded. Rodriguez made the save for the pin, but we got our visual of Jade getting the better of the champion. Hold that for later, possibly after WrestleMania. But with that, it was right into the Jackson Stratton interference for the actual story of the match. Yeah, almost classic WWE. The actual story they want to be telling stops the flow of the match and just means something completely different. So yes, Jackson Stratton came on out. Then Naomi made the save, and that was it for the baddies. KOD gave Bianca the pin on Liv. So the current status quo of Bianca being like the top lass, that's established here. I like what they're doing with the Jade Cargill and Bianca stuff, where they're starting to set up the story beats like now, reminding you of certain status quos and where people currently were but like before they joined as a tag team, just so that we're set and ready for when they do eventually split, of where people will be going. There's the expectations for both of them and the hills that they'll like have to climb. But there were more lasses to come on out. Nia Jax attacking the women's champions after their celebratory win, which called out Liv's number one contender in Io Sky. It took the four of them to take out Nia Jax, but those baddie shenanigans were cut off at every turn. Just played out pretty much as rapidly as I recalled it though, because they had no time. They started the match with 8 minutes left on the show. There was no time. Me just calling it through the beats, like, that's pretty much as quickly as it happened. Like, it really was that fast. Which is a little bit of a shame, but also that's happened with just other segments since they've gone to 2 hours. Like, they've got all of this stuff that they want to be doing. They've almost got 3 hours worth of content that they want to be putting out there. They're just fitting it somehow into a 2-hour show at the moment. So everything feels like kind of crammed. And that's going to take me to the other notes that I bashed through, just how much other stuff happened on this show, which carried on stories without me really having a big note to say about them. It was an efficient show where every segment was at least building to something in relatively competent fashion. I know. Hold off such astronomical praise, Matt. It's like, oh my god. Oh, just crazily strong positive words. Bronson Reed called out Seth Rollins, just going full brawl all over with security, giving a bunch of lads for Reed to tope out onto. The match to end it agreed for next week by Pierce, so I've given them their shine. They're booked in. I'll talk about Reed and Rollins after their big match. Dakota Kai returned Damage Control back to being able to participate in six-woman tags. They defeated the Pure Fusion Collective. One of those matches that was like just a nice time. Damage Control slotting in as those baby faces better and better as time goes on, especially when the women's tags aren't given the death slot. But the crowd got really behind Dakota Kai. I felt like that really meant a lot. And you could just feel like the presentation of Damage Control works so much better when Kai is there as that third woman. Kofi faced Pete Dunne, making waves with the hilariously bad, stiff strikes nowhere near a downed Kingston. Woods and Kofi arguing the reason for Kofi's loss. New Day's story building perfectly alright, but it's fair to say the angle to swing Dunne more serious and feared kinda just started flat-footed. Like, he's not particularly booking that makes him look particularly strong. Then when he's given his moment to look strong, the forearms weren't great, but also you don't show the angle. You can see just how bad those arc shots are. Maybe it's like, oh, one's bad, but it was bad enough where he can then get his alignment right. No, he kept punching in that bad position, just capturing three or four nowhere near blows as the crowd just has a bit of a... When Lance Storm hit Rob Van Dam with the chair shot so weakly and the ECW arena just booed. Something like that. Almost like an apathetic kind of reaction to. It's one of those... I want to call it a botch, but it's one of those muck-ups where it generally did impact the reception to the angle you're trying to do. It's like, ah, oh, it's a shame. Poor Pete.
Poor Peter.
Poor Peter. Miz and the Final Testament had their chinwag. Karrion got all angry at poor Mike and went out into the arena with a little beating. Pretty much just saying a beating is going to be promised. He's going to break the Miz's legs. But the Wyatts were out instead to a great big pop. And it was a Miz swerve, giving us our first sights of the Wyatts getting beaten down. Blood dripping down his eyebrow from the fake beating. They needed to sell it. They needed to make it look good. And I did like that the in-universe reasoning was that, well, he is an actor. It's like, oh yes. Being an actor is in itself a unique kind of superpower. Where you can truly make people believe to such a strong degree. Like, I do like the almost warped logic of that. Like, with actors being such incredible tricksters. It's like, you know what? I don't mind that. It is interesting that of all groups, Final Testament are chosen to be the ones to get the first beating over the Wyatt Six. But also, there's also a very high chance that this will be the last time and The Miz may very much pay for doing that trick. So, the White Six feel like a kind of group where, I wouldn't say they hold grudges, but, you know, they do balance things out. That feels like that's the kind of group you can book them like that. They can take a beating, because what they will give in return will more than balance things back into their favour. Where they will get that message out in the end. But anyway, that is the end of the review. Monday Night Raw, a show where every segment kind of meant something and flowed through, but also another one where you didn't need to watch this week, really. Same with Friday Night SmackDown. I feel like this SmackDown might be more important, just because of what they have been setting up. Big kerfuffle for the women's main event, with a woman after woman coming out, feeding into like whatever feuds are playing out at the time in rapid fashion. Again, the main event from Night Raw started with 8 minutes left on the show, and not only did they have to do a match, they also had like all of those interferences to get through with 8 minutes. It's like, Jesus Christ, that's like no time. Just immediately just bang, bang, bang. But SmackDown was all about setting up the Bloodline stuff, which flowed through Monday Night Raw, but is truly going to start to pay off this Friday, because who are going to be the fifth men? We're building to War Games. I mean, not that many weeks to go, with it being Full Gear next weekend and then Survivor Series the week after that. My British arse is about to get time kicked. I'm about to be pushed all over the place. My body's about to really struggle. But anyway, with that I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. Thank you for listening to me wattle on for these 30 minutes about a show where not a lot happened. What am I going to title this episode? Well, you know, I don't have an effing clue. It's a show where stuff happened, but I can't call it that. I don't know how far down do I... How mediocre do I play this? What do I even call the main event? Oh, so for me, this is relatively funny because I know you know what it's called. You listening to this, you know what this episode's called. I haven't got a freaking clue. Imps WWE Adventure. Stuff happened. Cool. So anyway, with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.